Thank you all for welcoming me back. And thank you, Sally, for being the one who initiated my ability to be part of this congregation. I remember a meeting with Sally some years ago, and ever since then, it's been such a joy to work with Sally. And Sally, the way you cut right to the chase and make decisions and say, that's the topic we want, let's do that. I just so appreciate it. It's been really fun. So let's today, happiness. I've been so happy as we've been doing this whole service so far. So it's not really some abstraction. This is really, I feel very happy. And it seems to me that the point of a spiritual practice is to generate happiness and transform our suffering. Why else would we do this? Really, why else? So in my tradition, my Plum Village Zen tradition, our practice is very steady and gentle, and we practice happiness here and now. Not as something to achieve later, but right now. But I think happiness is sometimes misunderstood. We are suspicious in our culture of happiness because we think it might be self-indulgence or hedonism. Well, why should you be happy when the world's so awful? What makes you so special? Oh, isn't that nice that you're happy? We have a lot of that kind of energy in our culture.
Right now, especially.
So we have to understand what happiness is in order to understand how to practice happiness. So I'm going to talk about that today, what happiness actually is and how we practice that. I'm going to go back to the teachings of the Buddha as our starting point. And the Buddha said, I teach suffering and the liberation from suffering. What could he have meant by that? Teach suffering and the liberation from suffering? The Buddha saw that people were so lost in their suffering that they didn't even know they were suffering. For me, this became apparent. I went to China before the pandemic shut everything down. And as I traveled through China, I noticed that very often the air was very, very polluted. You couldn't see a blue sky. And so people that were living in this part of the world, I imagine, seldom ever saw the blue sky and didn't even really know that the air was polluted. That's just the color of the air. And it's sort of like that with our suffering. Our suffering can be so pervasive that we don't even know we're suffering anymore. So we have to know that before we can do something about it. As I reword what the Buddha taught, I think the Buddha could have also said, I teach happiness and the cultivation of happiness, because ultimately it's the same thing as I teach suffering and the liberation of suffering. The suffering and happiness are a continuum. They're not two separate things. Like, for instance, my cup of tea here is half full. So from the perspective of suffering, I could say that my glass is half empty. But from the perspective of happiness, I could say my glass is half full. But the same amount of tea exists in the cup, either way, depending on whether I say it from suffering side as emptiness or the happiness side as fullness. It's helpful to think of happiness as the absence of suffering and suffering as the absence of happiness. So all of us are on this continuum somewhere. Happiness and suffering, they inter are. I remember even as a child being sort of suspicious of the idea of heaven. Heaven as a place where there's no suffering. I thought, that doesn't make any sense. How would you know you're in heaven? And maybe we live sometimes in hell because we don't know that we're suffering. We're so surrounded by our suffering. So I think they have to go together. So what is this art that we can practice to cultivate our happiness? How do we actually do that? So I think there's two aspects to that I want to talk about. One is cultivating our happiness, and the other is transforming our suffering, because they go together. So let's start with suffering, since that's the kind of the hard one. We'll get that one out of the way first. The first thing we have to do is see our suffering. It's what the Buddha meant by I teach suffering and the liberation from suffering. We have to see it first. And when we think of suffering, I often tend to default to seeing the gross manifestations of suffering, the really horrible things, the loss, the death, the grief, the failure, the pain. But, you know, I think rather than translating the word that the Buddha used for suffering into the word suffering, a better translation might be dis-ease. Dis-ease. We have dis-ease about us, about our life. And that original word was the word dukkha. And dukkha is a Sanskrit word that means unsatisfactoriness. And it literally means a wheel whose hub is off-center. So imagine how unsatisfactory it would be to ride in a cart whose wheel is the hub off-center. Every time the wheel would go around, you would bounce like this, and the road would be, even if it was smooth, very rough for you. A kind of dis-ease, a dissatisfaction. So that's a better idea of the suffering we do to transform than instead of just like, oh, my leg hurts so badly. You know, it's this sense of dis-ease. And part of the reason it's hard to transform our suffering is we often confuse our suffering for our happiness. What could I possibly mean by that? I think back to the time when Europeans and Americans owned slaves, right? This is a gross form of suffering. But from the position, from the point of view of the slaveholder, I imagine that they did not see that they were causing great suffering. They thought that they were making an economic system that was sustainable. How else am I going to grow sugarcane if I don't have slave labor to do it? They confused their suffering with their happiness. I wonder if we're doing that right now with our automobiles. You know, right now we think we are generating happiness for ourselves by having our own car that we can drive whenever we want, and we don't have to put up with other people in a bus or on a train. We have our own private little sanctuary that go down the road, but we're not seeing the suffering that that actually entails. Future generations may look back at us and judge us for the way we use fossil fuels for our convenience, the same way that we're judging slaveholders. That's my suspicion anyway. But it can be also, we can also very subtly confuse our suffering for our happiness. So for instance, in my aging body, I'm realizing that the best thing I can do for my happiness is to take care of my body by exercising every morning. But there's an idea in my mind almost every single day that says, nah, skip it. Skip it. You'll be so much happier if you don't exercise today. But if I listen to that over and over again, what I find is that my back starts to hurt, my belly starts to grow, I can't do the things I want to do, I can't lift the stuff out on my farm like I used to. I cause my suffering. But I confuse that with my happiness. So we have to find a way to transform that. Transform that. So what do we do to transform that, that misunderstanding? Again, two things I'm going to suggest here. The first one is let's stop watering the seeds of our suffering. Let's stop watering the seeds of our suffering. Let's resolve not to keep inflicting the same suffering on ourselves and others that we've been doing all our lives. You know, one of the things that came to mind when I was thinking about this, that what I do, I tend to wake up in the middle of the night and ruminate, right? I ruminate about something I did or didn't do, something somebody else said or didn't say. That is nothing but watering the seeds of suffering. My rumination does not change the situation at all. It doesn't make it better. It doesn't change what I did or change what I didn't do. It's just watering the seed of suffering in me. So this is something that I can stop doing. and this will make my suffering reduced and my happiness increased. I'm sure you can find things that you can do like that as well. What do you do to cause yourself to suffer? What ideas do you carry about your supposed failures? Or what anger are you holding on to for 40 years over what somebody did to you in the past? These are seeds we can stop watering and make ourselves happier. So the second thing that we can do is to meet our suffering, our self-imposed suffering particularly, with kindness and compassion. Oh my gosh, when I wake up in the middle of the night and I start to ruminate and I realize that that habit of my mind is causing me so much suffering, the best way for me to stop that is to greet it with kindness and say, oh, my rumination, you're here again. You've been trying to protect me for so long. Please, you can stop now. And meeting it that way with kindness is so much more effective than me to layer another layer of suffering on top of that and say, you jerk, you've been doing this over and over again. Why don't you just stop it? Right? All that does is just add another layer of suffering on top of my rumination. But if I can meet it with kindness, then that rumination has a graceful way to lay itself down. So those are two ways that maybe we can transform our suffering. So let's move on to cultivating our happiness, because really these are the same things, but just looked at from the different end of the continuum. You know, our life is often painful. You know, there are painful things in our life, birth and death and loss. Those are all potentially very painful things. But we don't suffer because of those things. We actually suffer because we fight against those things. So a way to cultivate our happiness is to realize that it's not the events of our life that are causing us not to be happy. It's our response to those events that are causing us not to be happy. I've learned this very powerfully from my teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh. He had a stroke in 2014, and he lost the ability to speak, and he lost the ability to move the right side of his body. So this was a man who is a public figure who is speaking and often and traveling around the world. He lost the ability to do all of those things. And I can imagine he could have suffered a lot when that happened. But he greeted that in a way that created more happiness for himself. He didn't fight that. He said, this is the way it is. And now here I am. This is my life. And he met that with as much happiness as he had. That was a powerful lesson for me, because I would think that having a stroke could really make you angry, right? I've lost these abilities. I can't do this. But that's not the way he met it. He'd been practicing how to meet his difficulties for years, for decades. And so when this big difficulty came, he knew what to do. And he did it. To generate happiness means to live in the world with your heart undisturbed by the world. And that takes practice. So I want to offer three ways now that we can generate happiness. We had two ways to transform suffering. Let's talk about three ways to generate happiness. So the first practice is to see our happiness. To see the sacred in the mundane. So in my tradition, we do this with little poems called gathas. And we use gathas for everything that we do. So when I wash my hands, I have a little gatha that reminds me that the water flowing over my hands is a miracle that flows from high in the mountains and deep in the earth. And I merely need to turn on my tap and that water runs over my hands. That is seeing the sacred in the mundane. If without that practice, I might just wash my hands without even thinking about it, take it for granted, but I can turn that into a sacred act. I can turn the act of putting a spoonful of oatmeal into my mouth from a mundane into a sacred act. And I can be so happy when I actually taste my oatmeal. Without remembering that happiness, I will simply put that oatmeal in my mouth, fail to taste it, fail to even know it's there while I scoop up another bite of oatmeal. So we have to first see our happiness. The second one is kind of an interesting one. We have to allow our happiness to be present. We have this negativity bias where our mind tends to see 5 times as many negative things as positive things. This has been validated by scientists, and I don't have time to go into it now. But our ego often pushes back against our happiness because our ego has this negativity bias. It's looking for what's wrong, and it's looking for what it wants to defend itself against. So we have to actually look and see that happiness is present and overcome that negativity bias. So when we're at the grocery store, we have to actually look and see the smiling face of the cashier when the cashier presents a smile to us. We have to see that. When we're driving our car, we have to notice when someone allows us to turn onto the busy street in front of them. We have to notice that happiness. Don't worry, be happy. That's the point of the song, is he's singing to us to notice our happiness. Love that song. So then the third way, it's just like in our transforming our suffering, we have to water the seeds of happiness. You know, we talked about stopping watering the seeds of suffering. We have to actively water the seeds of happiness. We have to do things like take our tea and water the seed of happiness by taking a sip of our tea in full awareness. I taste the mint leaves that made this tea. I'm grateful for the tea farmer who grew this tea, for the people who cultivated it and dried it and brought it to me. I'm grateful for all of those things. I'm watering the seed of happiness by tasting my tea. We have something that we have a seed we can water for our happiness that's with us all the time, and that's simply enjoying our breath. There are people throughout the world right now who have COVID, who for drawing a breath is painful, is a struggle, is fearful. And yet here we sit, able to draw a breath, complete happiness to do that. We can water the seed of smiling. And we used to think all the time that we would smile once we were happy. But no, we can smile now, and happiness will follow. Try it. Smile right now. And feel how that changes your whole body. Changes your mind. We can water the seed of smiling, and we don't have to wait for happiness. Happiness will be right there. So mindful practice is the art of generating happiness. That's why we are mindful. Okay, so we've talked about happiness a little bit, but I also want to, before I end, I want to distinguish joy and happiness, because in a very specialized way that I think of them, they are different things. Joy and happiness are different things. So joy is a deep form of happiness. Happiness depends on outside circumstances. For instance, I'm very happy when I get to go to Hawaii and put my feet in the warm water. I can see the blue sky. I can feel the waves lapping at my feet. I can feel the sand in my toes. That makes me very, very happy. But joy does not depend on outside conditions. I can be very joyful when I realize that I can still be happy even when my feet aren't in the Hawaiian waters. That is joy, to know that I can be happy no matter what comes my way. I had an interesting experience with this just recently. I had a colonoscopy, right? And who wants to have a colonoscopy, right? Is that about the most invasive thing? And you've got to do all this terrible prep and spend all this time sitting on a toilet. You know, it's just not very fun. But I found myself, as I was laying there in the doctor's office on this gurney and this gown with my behind hanging out, that I was actually joyful. I did not want to have a colonoscopy. I did not want to go through this. The conditions for happiness were not present for me, but the conditions for joy were present for me. Because I knew that no matter what happened, I could be present for this and I could be happy. Bring it on. Bring it on. Put the IV in my arm. I can be joyful. I don't want it, but put it right in there. Wheel me into that room. I don't care. I have joy. So that's the difference between happiness and joy. So as we water these seeds of happiness and grow more and more familiar with our happiness and how to generate our happiness, joy starts to arrive at the same time because we realize I can be happy even without those conditions. And that is freedom. That is freedom. I think of Nelson Mandela and the years, the decades he spent in Robben Island prison. And at first, he was a very unhappy man. He was oppressed. He was tortured. He was starved. He was beaten. But over time, he began to find joy again. Find joy even in that life. I remember the Dalai Lama talking about one of his students who was captured by the Chinese and put into a Chinese prison. And same sort of experience. He was tortured. He was denied food and water and sleep. And when he was finally released, what he told the Dalai Lama was there was one moment when he was really afraid. And it was the moment when he thought he might lose his compassion for his jailers. When he might, in other words, lose his joy. And he found it again. These are people who have cultivated their happiness and transformed their suffering. And they aren't what we can do. We're taking baby steps towards what those two examples, what those people did. But I bring those examples because it is possible. It is possible. It is possible to face our life unflinchingly and to feel the joy of that. I know that I am going to get old, I'm going to get ill, I'm going to die, and I'm going to lose everything and everyone I love. That is going to happen. I cannot stop that. But joy is being able to face those difficult truths and be happy anyway. Joy is like getting on an inner tube and enjoying the ride even when you know that Niagara Falls is up there ahead somewhere. Because it's up there somewhere for all of us. So let's take the ride. Let's enjoy the ride. Let's learn to be happy. Let's learn to be joyful. Thank you all for your kind attention. It makes me very happy to be here.